Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Get in on all the sports action and your chance to win up to 100 times your cash with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. This episode is sponsored by Audible, the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500.
This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable.
Rodgy.
Oh my God, Davo! It's coming, Hummel!
It is coming. It's coming, Rome. It's coming, Hummel. It's coming, Rog. Oh, I don't even know what being English is anymore. From the Embassy Row Studios in the crap part of Bedford, the crap part of the South Fork of Long Island. Nowhere's crap today, Rog. It's a Men in Blazers Spotify Green Room Euro 2020, played in 2021. Instant reaction pod.
Mate!
Oh, are you a little bit emotional, Rog?
I'm a little bit overwhelmed.
Because you've been so objective through the whole tournament. That made me laugh so much when you put that on Insta earlier. Because of all of the objectivity you've shown throughout the tournament, now suddenly it's okay for you to be a little bit emotional.
My goal in the next hour we have together is not to cry during the pod.
Oh, Rog, it's okay. It's okay. I know it's complicated. I've already cried. I cried at the final whistle. Oh, oh.
I'm not crying because of the football.
What are you crying because of?
My book's number one in the New York Times bestseller list.
Oh, Rogy!
I straight up bloody sweat. Harry Kane scored that crappy penalty that we'll chat about. And at the very same time, the publisher sent me a text being like, look at fucking this. It's insane. And like, I had to deal with the duality of England getting into a final for the first time in my lifetime and me somehow fixing the count in the New York Times bestseller list, mate. I am overwhelmed with emotion.
Rog, you've lifted the curse on England. You single-handedly, because of writing this book, essentially disowning England and accepting America, you have lifted the curse on England.
What an amazing act
of England fandom. You can use any pronouns you want, Rog.
Mate, I love you, Dave. It's what I want to say. I have thrown more beers into the air in the past 30 minutes than I believe the whole of England does. I need to get a number check. But I'm only saying this. I mean, first of all, thank you, GFOPs. You are the single greatest. But I'm just warning you, I am full of emotion today, Davo. So let's dive right in.
Okay, we're here on Spotify Green Room for the penultimate time this competition. There's no third place game, Rog. It's horrific.
It's a pathetic tournament. Even the CONCACAF Nations League.
That's a third place game. And what a journey we have been on. As you know, at this point, we post these green rooms as podcasts immediately after they're complete. But if you're not on Green Room, you don't get to take part in the Q&A, the chat, and the Rog pronoun drinking games.
Oh, mate, and I'm saying we, because the amount of buds I've had, or is it the amount of buds I've had because I'm saying we? Sometimes I can't tell the difference.
Well, I can. It's the latter. Okay, for those of you on Green Room with us right now, drink twice because Rog just said we twice. Also, don't forget to ask your questions in the chat section and we'll take the best ones at the end of the show. Can you kick this whole thing off with a twist, Michaelio?
I want to put it into context. I want to raise this 57th bud of my day with something I've talked about, but just to put England's achievement into context. I have been, as you know, so objective all tournament,
I'd say Denmark leaning. I'd like that's how I, if I was on, if it was a Facebook profile, Danish curious, I think I'd say.
I've spoken to a few of your relatives on social media. But anyway, I'll let you go with that. I'll let you create that illusion.
I was pretty chill this morning until I was driving my eldest son, Samson, this morning, and he made a queue of every single English national team single of my lifetime. And there's been many, David, you remember them all. Yeah, we went through Three Lions, which isn't, I mean, it's like an ironic tune of wonder. Vindaloo is fine. New Order's World in Motion is unbelievably warm and joyful. But then he hit the 1982 World Cup anthem this time. Do you remember that song?
This time, more than any other time.
This time
is not going to be like the last time, because this time we're going to make it through. No,
we're going to find a way. There's a song about, you know, we failed you in the past, but this time we're going to find a way to get away. And it's got a kazoo solo. It starts with like a bizarre Smurfy style synth opening, and then it gives away to boom, boom. Boom, a marching drum beat, and the whole
that
team...
That sound in the background, by just, the way, sorry. I'm pouring myself some Camarena, the official tequila of Men in Blazers.
I've got to get it in there. Get in there,
lad.
I'm just like, the lyrics were filled with naive promise, and it just took me back, Davo, to the age of 11, 1982, when I believed in England still with all my heart, as sometimes I believe you do, and I just melded with you. I remembered a time when I believed in this team with all of my being. They were my gods. Put yourself on mute if you're making a drink. Kevin Keegan.
That was me.
Trevor Brooking. Yeah, put yourself on mute, my love. When they sang, it's just like, it's when they sang that they were going to win, I believed them with all my heart. They crashed out, of course, cautious yet unbeaten, eliminated in the weird formatted second group stage of the game. And I sobbed for weeks. I was a boy who, for the first time in his life, realised that my heroes, my gods, could not deliver. And it was the first of many traumas supporting England. Just a cycle of hope, dashed hope, self-sabotage, just shattering impotence. And so now, Dave, I'm saying that because we have, like, losing felt so core to my Englishness. I'm no longer English. I'm Team America now. But in that moment, it all came back to me. The power of what we've just witnessed, Davo, and I'm so bloody happy for you, mate.
I'm happy for you too, Rog, because I do understand your pronouns. And I know that, you know, nationality is a complex thing and football fandom is often remembered. You know, you grow up, there are memories, significant memories of your childhood, which lead you into emotional places. And I thought that story you posted today about your drive with Samson and all those songs was beautiful. But I got to say, I never believed in an England side as much as I believed in this England side and this the remarkable man, Gareth Southgate, this remarkable group of young men. Okay, for those of you who missed the game, there was just quite a big one. England beat Denmark 2-1. It was the Danes that took the lead when in the 30th minute, Mikkel Damsgo thudded. He absolutely crashed it, Rog. A lightning bolt, a free kick past Everton's Jordan Pickford. But just 9 minutes later, this resolute England team clawed their way back, bounced back, Rog, into the game when Mr. Swivels, Harry Kane, played in Bukayo Saka, who banked a hard low drive across the area off Danish captain Simon Kjær and into the net. After a scoreless second 45 in which Kasper Schmeichel pulled off some incredible saves, one particularly from Harry Maguire, the game made its way into extra time where Raz driving to the hole like an English Allen Iverson was charged to have been felled in the box. And after seeing his initial penalty saved by Schmeichel, King Harry Kane smashed home the rebound to win it for England and send Gareth Southgate's men to England's first final in 5.5 decades.
Oh, mate, what have we witnessed, Dave? I want to break it down emotionally. If you can transport yourself back in time, you know, it was amazing for me just to savour the moment, not just in the Euros or in football, but in life, to see England walk out onto the Wembley turf before 65,000 fans with their first international tournament final in 55 years within touching distance. This felt so much more seismic to me than the World Cup semi-final that they kind of had got themselves into, but we didn't really have belief that they could do very much. And they seemed as surprised and delighted as we were. There's just a very different feeling. And of course, this being at New Wembley, which I'd never seen like this before the game, David, the joy, the euphoria, the Atomic Kitten. How did it feel ahead of kickoff for you?
I gotta admit, I was really nervous and justified nerves because Denmark were coming into this tournament, coming into this game on such a team high. Of course, having faced the most awful challenge, the low moment of Christian Eriksen losing the first two games, but the way they rebounded and bounced back themselves and got to this place. And they didn't just do it. They're not just here because of what happened to Christian Eriksen. They've been technically superb. They've been flexible. They're well coached. They have skillful players all over the field. And I just knew this was going to be an attritional hard game. I think I put money on it going to extra time. I've made so many bets, I can't remember every single one I laid. But I just felt that it was going to go a long way. And I was nervous before the game, Rog.
Yeah, and you know, listening to Southgate before the game, I mean, I know Denmark are an aggressive pressing collective and they had a full strength for this tournament at this stage team. But their population is about as big as Wisconsin. And, you know, listening to him, that's fascinating how we talk. We've got to defend in the way we have done. We know we're going to be able to deal with their play between the lines, their crosses. I mean, I saw before the game, listening to the English players, this felt like it was as much a psychological test in which their own demons, their own ability, their own tenacity was going to be as important as the footballing challenge. And this team's young and didn't live through all the traumas that we have, David. Yeah. But the air felt so thick with dreams and fear before kickoff. It all felt like a Star Wars scene where the Rebel Alliance are scrambling jet fighters to enter a battle against the Empire and the whole of civilization's at stake. And Denmark, mama words, they are not the Empire. They're the opposite. But to the English media, Denmark were almost besides the point before kickoff. It was the consistent failure, the self-sabotaging defeat that was the Empire. Almost the enemy inside your own head was what I feared, David.
Yeah, and then look, one other thing to bear in mind is semi-finals of major tournaments are usually pretty close affairs, partly because teams have time to prepare against the opposition. They have a very good sense of how they play and who their team are. Come on, Hibbo. He's excited. He's allowed some excitement today.
And Hibbo's looking at Gareth Southgate on the television and humping the TV.
You also get to really have, you've had a very good look at the opposition through multiple games, quite apart from the fact that Denmark and England have played twice in the last year. And I think that, you know, it's kind of like an NBA playoff game where the teams really understand in sort of late in the series what each team are trying to do, and they can really attempt to nullify it. And I thought Denmark did that very well.
Early exchanges, both teams follow each other out. Felt like England were, in boxing terms, in the early outset, landing the better punches, cleaner, more calibrated, more effective. Luke Shaw, Raz, Declan Rice just combining with menace and intent. But you knew if they could weather the first 20 minutes, they could grow into the game as the pressure and weight of expectation fell on England. And then they started to flick onto the overlapping mailer on the break or via a Jordan Pickford mental moment. Denmark really took the crowd out of the game 20, 25 minutes in, David. And with a veteran savvy, just started to shuttle passes and do their work. And it was fantastic to witness.
Yeah, and England at the same time started to make sloppy mistakes, giveaways in the middle of the field. Jordan Pickford with a couple of, you know, mistakes, giving the ball away when he was trying to sort of clear from defence. And every ball, you know, sometimes we all see this in football. We always see it more going against our team than the other team. But every single bounce, every single random rebound, every single loose ball seemed to be falling to a red shirt.
Couple of shots from Dolbear, robbed Rolex Ronaldo. England seemed rattled in a don't-you-know-who-we-are kind of way. Series of free kicks turned to a direct kick in a dangerous, dangerous area, 30th minute. What did you see, David? I've got to go and deal with Hibbo. I'm going to put you on mute.
I mean, look, I saw a couple of, frankly, sloppy free kicks given away by England against Denmark, something that England have done pretty well the whole tournament, not giving away free kicks. And then, you know, the goal, you know, Pickford never seemed to be able to communicate correctly with his wall. It was, seemed to take an age, Rog. It took, seemed to take 4 minutes for it to develop before Damsgaard, the little baby-faced assassin, Rog. He doesn't look, my 15-year-old daughter looked at me and said, how old is he? Is he my age? He doesn't look very old. Bare little baby face. He stepped up. And one of the most exquisite free kicks you'll ever see. That is it not the first direct free kick scored in this tournament?
First goal conceded by England. First direct free kick of the tournament. And it was dictionary definition Danish dynamite from 35 yards out. The Danish wall, if you look at it, just shifted to block Pickford's line of sight. It was magnificently done. It was almost like an NBA style set play, and Picky dove, but suddenly, and you could see the astonishment on his face. He looked at his own arms as he dove and said, suddenly they seem to have, well, shrunk.
Without a doubt.
It was harsh. It really was on the poor guy. I mean, he's kept a clean sheet in 13 of his last 19 games, 692 minutes of goalless football. But my Lord, what a way to concede. And when the Danes conquered England in 1013 under Swain Forkbeard, the first Danish king of England who led a full-scale invasion, I imagine it looked a lot like that, being smited by a 21-year-old with a receding hairline and seemingly no fear. And all tournament long, we've said, you know, England will have to face adversity at some point. How will they cope with it? And to me, they cope with it bloody well, David.
Yeah, look, the first thing that when I was teaching tennis that I taught to the juniors I was working with is bounce back ability. When you lose a tough point, make sure you win the next one. And the bounce back ability is one of the most important qualities in sport. In golf, hit a bad shot, come straight back, hit a great one. And in sport, that ability to bounce back, to score right after you've been scored on yourself is just it shows phenomenal mental strength. And that is all credit to the coaching team on how they've got this group of boys thinking. And frankly, you know, Raz, I've got to say, maybe should have scored one, you know, a minute before England did score. But an amazing response.
Hit one right at Schmeichel. Prefer to hit him in the old down belows than score a goal. That's my man. And that save was actually terrifying. It was in the Middle Ages, if you were actually in battle and you saw somebody do what Schmeichel did to Raz, you'd be like, oh my Lord, are the gods with Denmark in this battle? That would be rattling. But we only had to wait less than a minute to find the answer. Kane slipped in Saka with a stunning pass. What a young talent he is. I mean, name a player of Saka's age, Davo, who has had more experience at having to constantly bail out his elders, playing for Arsenal and England. And man, that ball he rolled right into Denmark's nerve point. It was as stunning as it was relief.
Yeah, arguably the most forced own goal of the tournament. But credit Harry Kane also. He drops deep in order to become the playmaker. He really is England's number 10 and England's number 9. He really should be a 9.5. It was an amazing piece of vision for him to play through Saka, and credit the young Arsenal player. Just speed kills in this game, Rog, again and again. Saka, Sterling, and at the end, Foden. Speed just kills. Put the ball across, and there you go, 1-1. Thank God I breathed a huge sigh of relief.
Own goal, continue its dominance of the headlines. Own goal, dude be the OG. And he playing half-time. I felt totally up. Should I say, you know, I was like, this is an insane game. What an equally matched balance tilt. Just even in the beer gardens, like English, traditionally we walk that category, chucking beers in the air. But I've got to give Denmark credit. Even in that category, Davo, every time we went to Copenhagen, it was essentially raining Carlsberg showers, and it was magnificent. They matched us in every bloody department into that second half. Harry Maguire, thunderous header, palmed away by a diving Kasper Schmeichel. Incredible performance by him. He'll be absolutely devastated. What a performance. That save, if you look at it, he dives, realises he's not going to get the ball, almost seems to summon an extra instalment of himself from deep within to parry the ball away. And the game came in surges. Both teams tried to enforce a very clear idea, different idea that they both had of football onto the game. And just emotionally watching it, I don't know how you were, but I was just having extreme mood swings, David. Both teams just almost bypassing midfield, just going for it. I felt seasick, David. It was like when you watch a good Bourne Identity hand-to-hand combat scene, that's what it felt like.
And one of those cutaways to the Danish beer garden when they had all the Carlsberg going down in Copenhagen, my mate Joe Blake turned to me and said, I only drink Carlsberg in Hong Kong, by the way. And it just left there in the room and everybody looked at him and we we'll save that story for another day. But Carlsberg is a drink that you can find one city and that's where you can drink it.
It was everywhere around the world, just to be completely clear.
The second half is, I thought Denmark, it was end-to-end for a while. And then as the game went further, you just started to get the sense of Denmark tiring. And I think the statistics, the heat maps, everything will indicate that. You know, Denmark making, they put about 11 substitutions on. They kept on going to their bench. We kept on going to the sideline. The Ublo substitution sign was getting so much action. The fourth official was like building biceps as he was holding it up. And then the...
I feel such a range of emotions when I see my Ublo board on television. It's like I'm seeing a friend of mine get some real airtime. I'm like, ooh, my Ublo board's on TV again.
But so many substitutions, and Denmark was certainly tiring. And as the half wore on and you look down that English bench and you see Grealish and you see Foden and you see Marcus Rashford and you see Jordan Henderson and you see Tyrone Mings, you just have so many good players who can come on, you know, and change the game. England grew into it. As the half went on, I got more confident.
You missed the big one who would have put the game away in regs. DCL would have had a hat trick. I'm just saying.
I don't think he was even on the bench.
The bloody Grealish storyline was just like a complete and utter MacGuffin. I've got to say, I don't know how you felt about that. When he trundled onto the pitch with his, yes, many of you pointed out, very weird beard shaving line. He's clearly been like going at it with the manscaper from his down belows. But like the yell around Wembley could not have been louder if young Churchill himself had been exhumed and entered the game. You know, every time he got the ball, I kind of flickered. And England did manufacture the kind of chances where you thought they'd score, the ball at Kane's feet, the ball at Raz's feet, driving. But, oh God, the Grealish thing, what happened? How do you understand
it? Yeah, look, most of the chances were coming down the right. Well, I put it down to Danish coaching. I think they did two things really well in this game. I said yesterday that they were going to prepare, you know, individual plans against England players. And I thought their plan against Luke Shaw and their plan against Grealish when he came on was superb. They just didn't give them any space. And, you know, they were triple teaming Grealish when he came on. You know, we saw him getting fouled with his first touch of the game. We always see that. He gets fouled a lot, that guy. But they were just sending out players to the left, and they were saying to England, beat us on the right. We're not going to give you the left. We are not going to give you the left. You're going to have to beat us on the right.
Two extra time. I was like, please, not penalties. America, you've got no idea what kind of an ordeal, a sporting trauma, the idea of penalties is to anyone there's, like even me, who is loosely connected to the England team, just no bloody idea. But into extra time, Southgate brought on Hendo, so much leadership in crunch time. Southgate has stood loyally by his core, the two Harrys, you know, Raheem, Hendo, Jordan Pickford. He calls them the tribal elders, and down the stretch, he put his trust in them, and he was repaid, kind of, when Raz ran into the box. Mela breathed on him, and Raz, a little bit like a mouse running through giant redwoods, just took a tumble, and that's a penalty-ish, Dave.
Look, I think you'd have to say, in extra time, England were all over Denmark, and they were at the end of the game, and they were at extra time, and Denmark are just holding on. And if you allow players to run into the box again and again and again, especially a guy like Raheem Sterling, and, you know, that's one of those things. I think these replays that are shown again and again on television that all happen in slow motion and almost step by step, freeze frame, advance frame, step by step. You look at the speed that Raz is going, it did not take a lot of contact from, you know, more the second defender who challenged Sterling for him to go down. He's moving at speed, and you're going to get that decision. You just see it again and again and again. It went to VAR. They didn't see enough to overturn the call. The referee was in a good position. I have no problem with that being a penalty. Of course, I'm an England fan, but had that been called against England, you know what? And Denmark have been dominating the possession and running at us and dominating the game in that way, I don't think I'd have had a problem either.
By the way, can I ask you, we're going to talk about the penalty in a minute. You talked about the tired legs of Denmark and how England were overrunning them. Were you surprised we didn't get the fast legs, fast mind of Rashford? We didn't get Foden earlier, that they weren't flung on against such tired, exhausted minds and bodies?
Yeah, I wonder if he was just waiting because playing a little bit out for the penalty shootout, wanting to keep some of his veterans on for a potential shootout. But yeah, I was a little surprised. Certainly Rashford's speed, because that's where England were just outrunning Denmark, you know, from pretty much the final 10 minutes of, or final 20 minutes of regular time. And in injury time, when they brought on Foden and Trippier, it was, you know, it was over. And Sterling, the engine on Sterling just going and going and going and going. It was just amazing. But yeah, England had a lot of speed on the bench that they saved.
Up step K, I was like, please let Jorginho take it. I mean, how would you describe the penalty, David? It was almost like the bastard love child of Morata and Timo Werner.
He doesn't usually go there, by the way. I mean, he's a big, you know, his heat map is he goes hard into the bottom left corner. That's his place, or sometimes a little bit higher into the left. And so it was an odd penalty for him to hit. The problem with that penalty is it's very tough to, but it wasn't wide enough to push around. It was a little bit too hard for Schmeichel to catch. Very tough to sort of make that save and stop it. And thank God, from an England point of view, that Kane was there. Of course, Captain Kane, Superman, was there to put it back into the net.
Poor Denmark. Kasper Schmeichel parrying it. I've got to say, penalty kick should be like three throws. When you miss, the ball's dead. But the ball was very, very much alive. Kane relieved, wrapped it home. And God, it's just an insane way to defang 55 years of agony, of trauma, of pain, of self-loathing by facing your worst fears 1 second, the miss, and instantly overcoming them, Davo. And in that moment, it was magnificent.
It was an amazing moment. And then you just have the agony of the rest of the opening period of overtime and the rest of overtime to see if you can hang on.
You know, the amount of redemption in that. I realise the joy I'm feeling is not anything to do with England. I want to make that clear, obviously.
It's as an impartial journalist.
It's as a human being. I just look at that side. You know, Harry Kane, constantly derided in his early career, derided in the first two games of this tournament. Harry Maguire, what a year he's had. Luke Shaw, his three-year arc of suffering, agony, so probably really some terrible low moments, I imagine, for Luke Shaw. Raheem Sterling, who has taken so much abuse in a disgusting way that should never, ever be repeated with another human being. We need to learn the lessons of what Raheem has told us. Hendo. I mean, bloody hell. And above all, Gareth Southgate, David, to me, watching them play out this, you know, killing off the second bit, even as Denmark came into, to me, the joy is, as a human, these human beings are flag bearers for a group of young English men and women who refuse to be shackled by a history of pessimism and tearing each other down. That's what's magnificent. These men have run the gauntlet. They've come out the other side better, stronger, to provide examples for the next generation of English players. It's incredible.
Yeah, and the way they're managed as well, the way they're coached, the way they're prepared. And the least English thing they did from a football point of view was the way that they controlled that second period of overtime. Just passing the ball around, using skill, spreading the action, exhausting the Danish players, making them cover more ground. The way that we've seen superior teams, superior European teams, superior South American teams handle England time and time again. I've never seen an England team do that. Hang on with so much class, so much style. And the statistics at the end, you know, 20 shots to 6, 10 on target to 3, 59% of the possession, 730 passes to 534, 86% accuracy to 81. You just go down the list and, you know, fouls committed, like every single thing, they lead in those categories. And it was a very, very close game. But ultimately, I think we can look at it in a close game, a very close game, a mentally tough game. It was a really un-English and surprisingly dominant performance.
Can we just eulogise Denmark? Because,
oh my God, they deserve all the credit in the world.
I do want to cap this by talking about England and then touch quickly upon England, Italy, and then jump into your amazing questions and comments, GFOPs, on this remarkable day that we're all sharing together. But Denmark, to me, farewell, Godspeed, and thank you. Just an incredible tournament, really a testament to the power of human emotion. After all they've been through, they had no fear of losing after dropping their first two games, and then just went on and on and on beneath the emotional arc of Christian Eriksen's collapse. You know, they played phenomenal football, phenomenal collective football. I hope the US team look at that football. It was a very practical but very devastating style of football that took them on this arc from devastation to glory, near death to life. And the lesson I take from it, Dave, love and compassion can give you wings.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think on the other side, you know, you look at Denmark, you look at, you know, really we've, Denmark, of course, won this championship in the early 90s, but have, you know, we haven't seen a Scandinavian team really step up and be, you know, a highly world-ranked team since. And I think this Denmark, you know, program has a chance to do something really special that, that we haven't seen other. Obviously, Iceland caught a lot of people's imagination, but I think Denmark could really be there to stay. The player they missed most today was actually Christian Eriksen. They needed somebody in the middle of the park beyond Højbjerg who could just sort of try and unlock the English defense. And they never really had that from open play. They never really looked like scoring to me. And I think Christian Eriksen, they missed him terribly, terribly today. And I think, you know, Godspeed, Christian. I hope you come back, and I hope Denmark find you back in the squad and find a way to find a replacement for you down the road.
Oh, to England. I mean, it's coming home always felt ironic to me. A lot of Americans ask, you know, there was an intrigue about the songs that some of the American fans sing. A journalist said, you know, we need to stop singing "I Believe That We Will Win." And a number of American fans said, what's the difference between that and it's coming home? I mean, I love, you know, all football songs that feel natural and authentic. So I'm not here to debate what is and isn't. But I will say, it's coming home always felt ironic to me. And ironic, deeply ironic. Ironic no more. Just an iconic moment for New Wembley. You know, just semi-final defeat, 2018. 1968, 1990, 1996, exercise for England, a first final since 1966. That is, David, the kind of year every schoolboy knows but never saw. And now a trophy is just a win away. England are peaking. Tournaments are about peaking. They're peaking at the right time. And I say, after everything Britain has been through, it's so remarkable. It's after the Britain has had a devastating pandemic, that on the back of Brexit. And to watch them transform these men, transform the image of footballer from just A-list, bottle service willing, VIP room dwelling celebs to lovable national heroes who campaign on social issues, mental health, and against racism. Just to watch this team triumph on the field as they have repeatedly off it is magnificent.
Yeah, one of the most sincere moments I've ever seen in football happened at the beginning of the game when the English players took the knee and the Danish players applauded them. And I think it was very justified applause. You know, I think that this group of English players are seen as being activists, and they're inspiring a lot of players around the world to take an activist stance, which I think is remarkable and admirable. So, Rog, it comes to the end. We get to the final whistle. What were your feelings right at the end?
Oh, mate, I've got to say, I'm looking ahead to the final, an incredible final. Italy, England. I think Spain have showed England how to beat Italy. They did that without the beating part. You know, this is an Italian team built to seize control of the game, to hold the ball, to dominate. And Spain prevented them from doing that. They gave them just 30% of possession and really throttled the Italians down the stretch. And I cannot wait for Sunday, Dave. Mostly I'm full of excitement for Sunday. I love this line from Barney Ronay about how Mancini will be thinking. He said, Mancini is just one of nature's dukes. He projects a sense of something you didn't know you'd been missing. Italianism. The reality of that storied old winning machine. Seeing England go up, Davo, against that storied old winning machine is going to be humanly magnificent.
Yeah, it's something beautiful, Rog. And we talk about how tough it's been in England and Britain during COVID. It's been pretty tough in Italy as well. You know, they've had a very tough go of it over there. And this is, I think, this is the romantic, you know, despite the amazing story of Denmark, I think for with sort of football fans with a longer memory. I think England and Italy is a really classic fixture. And to see that going to be played at a capacity Wembley, I think it's going to be remarkable. I think it's going to be a huge, huge spectacle. Okay, here we go, Rod. Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. That's the big one. For all the marbles, England, I hope we get that little car again that brings on the trophy or the ball or anything, really, a whistle. England against Italy in the Euro 2020 finals.
And we will be back with a green room right after that. But now, yeah, let us dive right on in. Let us get up. The GFOP, share this glorious moment with us. Gem us up. Follow Davo. Follow Rog. Follow Men in Blazers on the Spotify green room. Just give us the rules, Davo, of the GFOP engagement, and we will dive right in.
Very simple rule. We're going to call you up onto the stage and invite you to speak. When you're moved to the stage, please just remember to stay muted until we call on you. Rog, who is up first?
Oh, it's an England win for the ages. The only way we can celebrate an England win for the ages is dialing up right from Kent into the green room. Welcome, 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 Mr. Chris Willis.
Guys, what the hell, man?
Live from Kent.
I've got no words.
Where did you watch the game?
I watched the game, and no one's going to believe me when I say this. I got an email from the FA during the week that said, here is your ticket, log on tomorrow at 9 a.m. to buy your ticket. And I said no. I gave it to a friend of mine. If anyone from the FA is listening, this didn't happen, but I let him log in with my details onto his app. He went to the game. He bought the ticket. I stayed in Kent with my daughter. We watched it in the pub together. I promised her that we could, bless her heart, she faithfully has sat and watched all the games on her own when I've been in the pub or I've been at the game. Or, you know, I've been to a couple of the games now. She faithfully has sat on her own and watched it in her bedroom. And I said, this time we'll watch it together. This is something that father-daughter, this needs to be experienced together. This is potential history in the making here.
So did you get down? How many pints did you get down, Chris?
Well, Dave, I've got work tomorrow, so I don't think my boss will pick on up on this. So I had four or five. The pub did, again, do three Jaeger bombs at halftime. So
hey, Americas, can I just ask you this? Well, I mean, that's a beautiful thing. You had a ticket to watch England, to partake in that communing at Wembley. Mm. And you were like, no, this is a memory that I'm going to weave into my life with my daughter and into my daughter's life.
Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I read your tweet this morning, Rog, actually, as well, about you driving with your son. And those that experience, you know, football, the first person I rang after the game was my dad as well. He's away at the minute on holiday. Straight on FaceTime with my dad, you know. You know, he got me involved in football. I've got my daughter involved in football. It's just, yeah, it's a family thing, football, isn't it? That's what it is. It's, you know, it's father to son, it's father to daughter. You know, football's a family game.
You're a beautiful human being. I mean, you were a man, I should say, who, I mean, you made us laugh when we met you, telling us what it's like to travel to Lithuania, to Kazakhstan, to you know, places only... And only, you know, Borat 2 would be shot to watch your England national team.
All of that means I'm going to be there on Sunday evening. I will be in Wembley Stadium, behind that goal, in my England shirt, with my mates. That's why I've done it. That's what it's worth. It's going to, and yeah, I've not really got the words for it. I've not really, you summed it up perfectly earlier. You know, all week at work, everyone's been saying, it's Denmark. You know, we'll beat Denmark. And they're right on paper. We're better than Denmark. If this was a qualifier, if this was a friendly, we'd have done them 3-0 at Wembley tonight, easily. It's just when it comes down to it, the big game, the big occasion, there's that psychological, you could see it in the England players' eyes, there was a psychological thing that said, 1990, 1996, 2018, can we actually do this? Can we go that next step now? Oh, look, there, as we speak, email from England Supporters Travel Club, your confirmation of ticket will be emailed to you tomorrow. There we go.
Mate, so can you? But here's what I'd say: you've gone there. Did you ever believe England were going to win something in your lifetime as you journeyed around Europe with them, or was that really not the point?
No. And do you know what? And in the 28th minute of extra time tonight, I didn't believe we were going to win anything. I, too much time following England, following Gillingham. you know, my first experience of football, my dad's from Newcastle. So when I was growing up, 95, 96 season, he had me following Newcastle. They blew a 12-point lead. 1996 summer, England blew the Euros. You know, it just, that was my football life, was it doesn't matter how good you are, you're not going to win. So don't even try, you know. It's just, now I've got no doubt we'll win this championship. As I said, it was a more of a psychological thing. You know, we should have beaten Denmark quite comfortably. We didn't, because there was a psychological sort of barrier for the players to overcome. I think we've overcome that today. I think now they believe that no matter how badly they... Well, I think we say we played badly. Denmark put up a good fight. But no matter how tough the times got tonight, we stuck at it. You know, we went 1-0 down, and a lot of other England teams in the past would have folded there. You know, within a minute, Kasper Schmeichel made that great save, and another minute later, we scored again. They're, you know, this is not something you're used to seeing from England, the belief in the players, you know.
So let me ask you this, and then we're going to let you go and Nectar more down quickies, a couple more Jaeger bombs of you with your family. Where does this night rank in your life, really, Chris?
God, that's a good question. I mean, the day my daughter was born is one of the greatest days of my life. Beating Germany in the second round is great. That was up there with the best days of my life. This is, it's definitely a top five days of my life in terms of what's happening now. But probably the least enjoyable game of football I've ever watched in my life. it's hard to enjoy a game like that, you know. It's probably my least favourite. I appreciate the shout out. I'm in a sort of a group chat with all of my Nashville fans now, all of the Nashville guys that I'm with, that I know. And I texted them during the second half extra time saying, I absolutely hate football. I don't know why I still watch this game. I hate football.
And now we're all back in love. Chris, we wish you Godspeed. We will speak to you on Sunday. Cheers. Enjoy every second. Keep making great memories through football. And God, I'm so bloody happy for you, mate.
Thank you, mate. Cheers, guys. I'll speak to you. Hopefully speak well. I'll be around Sunday. You might not get a lot of sense from me. Depends on the result.
We love you, Chris Willis. And we are going to bring to the stage the gentleman who he's almost part. If we were a threesome, we'd have him be the number three, Davo. Live from Denmark. Oh, Runeborn, mate. Come on up. How are you feeling?
I'm not here.
You are there, Rune. Here. No, you're I'm there. Not here. You're there. No. You're alive.
This didn't happen. I'm not alive. It didn't happen.
I love the most existential comment we've ever had in the entire history of Blazers.
This is not reality. It has never transpired, you know.
Yeah, it's all a simulation. I talk about this a lot on the podcast. We are all in a simulation. It just happens to be AI a simulation guys today.
We're obviously very, very disappointed and very sad. I'm sitting on my balcony with my girlfriend, who's going inside right now because she doesn't want to listen to any more crap, and we are so sad about what happened.
What do you feel? If you were to say sadness and pride, two different emotions, how would you percentage them after that performance?
Pride. We did good at these Euros. We did good, and we did above expectation. Internationally seen, everybody watching the Danish team from the outside would say that this was a very good result. And from, the National Football Association would say this is a very good result. But I think us as fans, we're like, we could have won this one. And what happened tonight was like the English team with their very, very, good aggressive style. They pushed us to be Italians. And they made us play this game. It was super defensively, and it was just not our style of game. So I think as Kasper Juhlmann, our coach, has been honored for so many good dispositions throughout the campaign. This night, it just didn't work. It was like there was no magic touch to change the game, and we just we lost as a collective as we rose as a collective.
I've got to say, Runeborn, we are going to love and leave you, but I want to thank you and your nation. I think we've all learned a lot about football, but mostly more important stuff. We learn a lot about humanity, about life, about what's good, what's important, about collective joy, tenacity, and human wonder. So I want to thank you. I want to raise my glass to you. I genuinely, one of the top places I want to visit in the world after this.
You know, you're always welcome.
Word is over is Denmark.
Come visit, you know, whatever. You know, and right now I'm just fucking mad.
And
so,
we're gonna leave you to be with your girlfriend. Go and enjoy. Yeah. We love your room, yeah. Courage. Mate,
good night.
I would go if they had a Waffle House. I'd be there in a
But
heartbeat.
If you have any questions.
We love you, Roomborn. And scene. We now bring up to the stage, oh, it's Mr. Matt Schiffman. Where are you from, Matt? And what's your question?
Hey, guys. Matt Schiffman calling from Wicker Park, but in Chicago. But I'm the one from Jam Lando. Need to work on my memories with Matt Schiffman Sting.
What's your question, mate?
So, Raj, we know who you'll be cheering for on Sunday, but I was wondering, who will the neutrals be cheering for? Italy are so likable, but they've won a lot of trophies, and England has not, so they're a bit of the underdog story.
Oh, Dave, how'd you handicap that? Dave, you know, so the reality is, it's a great question.
My bad, sorry, I was on mute.
I think most casual viewers who are tuning in from America will be cheering for England. I think there's there's the deeply casual who don't know anything about football, and I think that's more of a crapshoot. Those who do, I think, through the Premier League, there's just an affinity. It's such a, I mean, this is an amazing thing. Jürgen Klinsmann did it with his German team. In 2006, he turned a German team that was genuinely derided. He turned it into a deeply likable collective. It was an astonishing thing as an Englishman to watch that and have to love and admire them. And I think this English team is just so remarkable and admirable. Yes, by the way, the Italian team, what they've done is remarkable. To miss the World Cup 2018, bounce back with this intense style of play, this manager. There's a lot of redemption sprinkled around. I think the Italian team is such a footballing narrative that the broadest possible audience, I'd imagine, would, God, just, I mean, if you don't love the sight of 30 million beers just telescoping into the air, if you don't enjoy seeing middle-aged men just feel that it's totally legit, totally natural, it's now like, it's like when you walk on the beach in Brazil, you just see, you know, 60-year-old men with huge stomachs. It's totally legit to wear a Speedo. It's got like that at Wembley now. It's just legit to just rip it all off. And I think for that reason, that human joy, it's England all the way. David.
I have to say, though, as an Englishman with a remarkable number of Italian-American and Italian friends living in America, certainly my world of casual football fans, including my partner, are going to be rooting very hard for Italy. And I think that, you know, it sort of really depends what kind of flavor of football you enjoy. Italy and England offer two very different flavors of football. I think, you know, people who enjoy Premier League football probably are going to root for England. I think people who enjoy the more continental aspect of football are going to root for Italy. It's going to be to me, I think it could be an all-time classic final. Two teams, you know, today, I think, you know, we heard Rune talk about this a little bit. Denmark, I think, focused so hard on shutting down England's aggressive offensive play, they forgot to play football themselves at certain times in the game. And I think Italy are going to go and play their game, and England are going to go and play their game. And I think you're going to see them running at each other. I think you could see a lot of goals. And I think it could be a remarkable, remarkable game of football. And I think the neutral would want that more than anything.
Roll on Sunday. We're going to bring to the stage the great George. And I think there's a clue in the surname, Gianfalcano. Oh, welcome. Where are you from, George? What's your question?
I am from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Shout out D.C. United and the Washington Spirit.
Yes.
My question for you guys is, obviously it's going to help England playing at Wembley, but how much do you think it'll help compared to if this game was played in Rome or if this game was played at a neutral venue?
I mean, look, there is a very large Italian population
in London. So I think a lot of Italians are going to travel, and I think there'll be a lot of Italians at the game. I think way more Italians at the game than there were Danes at the game this weekend. There is a great affection between the Italian people and the English people, and a long history of Italian players playing superbly in the Premier League. Shout out to my beloved Gianfranco Zola, my favorite Chelsea player of all time. And I think obviously it favors England playing at home, but I think the Italian squad feel pretty at home at Wembley. They played their semi-final there against Spain. They won a penalty shootout. They have good memories. And I think, you know, it's not like Anfield on a cold night in February. This is playing in perfect conditions in Wembley on a field where they have happy memories.
You know, I want to say, I think this tournament structure is utterly ludicrous. I think it's no surprise that I think three of the teams that had the most home games got into the semi-final. And it's just such a ridiculous imbalance to the way it's crafted. And I am so happy for England for reasons that you can listen to the first 87 minutes of this podcast. But it is utterly ludicrous that that a team can have such a balance in a tournament which is meant to be flung around, and to send Denmark to Baku to play a quarterfinal and then fling them back here. I mean, at the end of an exhausting season, it just is utterly, I mean, it's embarrassing and shambolic. That doesn't take away from England's wonder, but I've found the whole structure of the thing. I mean, I'm so grateful for there to be a tournament. I don't want to be picky about it. But my God, UEFA have got to get this tournament properly in order in many ways.
Rog, you can only compete in the tournament you're playing in. However, I don't think it'll surprise anybody to understand that the reasons why the tournament was structured in this way was about money. It was about just cash in envelopes, and the way that UEFA could make the most money, that's the way they structured the tournament.
We'll bring to the stage the great Jennifer Fisher. Oh, where are you from? And what's your question? Welcome, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me. I'm from Dallas, Texas.
Hey, my God, Mark Stein country. What's your question, Jennifer?
My question is, what is your preferred lineup for Sunday? And particularly if we were going to try to, if England was going to be more assertive offensively.
Yeah, I think the game will lead England to be, I think it's going to be a more open game. I think today the game was about Denmark trying to stop England from doing what they wanted to do. I think Italy are going to go and play football. And I think there's going to be a lot of counterattacking from both teams. I think once again, the question will be, you know, will Gareth Southgate go with a back four or with a back five against Italy? He decided, you know, to surprise of many observers, including myself, he went with the back four against Denmark, but he had such incredible width with Saka. Saka, I felt, you know, throughout the game in the first half was pinned back a little bit. He was almost playing in a wing back role on the right, and the defense shifted, and Shaw was almost trying to find a way to play as a wing back role. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of changes. I think England will go with a very similar starting lineup to what they went with tonight. I think the one player who it occurs to me, Roger, I'm interested to hear what you think. The one player to me who maybe made a claim to start was Jordan Henderson.
Yeah. I mean, when they needed daddy safety, Hendo came on. I've got to say, just his rise, his career, what he brings to this team in terms of leadership in this moment, how the other players respond to him. I can very much see that. Because ultimately this is going to be a game that is about control of the midfield. The player that I feel saddest for is Phil Foden, who got his hair done up as if he thought he was going to be like a lead character and has been given in Band of Brothers, he'd be one of the characters who we can't even remember his name. He keeps coming into occasional scenes and occasional episodes. But you are just like, oh my Lord. And I'm in agony. I also feel if Phil Foden was given more of a role, that guy, I've said it many times, is like a human hand grenade. And I can really see just a wonderful, wonderful moment for that kid. And I would love late to see him come on and just do the thing that he's dreamt about, that he deserves, that is, that really feels like his destiny in my mind. But I've got to believe that Southgate, this loyal man, this trusting man, this man of deep commitment to his squad, once he works out the back five, the back four thing, everything else will be deeply unsurprising. We're going to bring to the stage the great Shea Sola. Welcome. Where are you? What's your question?
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm from Knoxville, Tennessee.
Whoop, whoop.
I wanted to shift gears a little bit and ask you a question about the other big tournament that's going on right now. And I'm not talking about the CONCACAF Nations League. I'm referring to the Copa America. I'm married to a Colombian, so I watched the game, the semifinal last night against Argentina, and was devastated with the outcome. But I did gain a little respect for Emiliano Martinez and some of his mind games that he was playing on the Colombian players. And I was wondering what you guys thought of that tactic, and also what you thought of the final, the predictions for the final of the Copa America.
Oh, Shay, how do I say your name properly?
Che.
Che, thank you.
It's actually Argentinian, but I'm not Argentinian.
I am so good. That's like me. My name's Roger. That's English, but I'm not English. You and me are the same. I'm the Che of America. Mate, that was an incredible thing. I mean, it was incredible for many reasons. Even when Everton aren't playing, Everton are bringing incredible misery to huge areas of the world.
Oh, Yerry Mina, at that moment, Messi ends up making Everton the story by taunting him.
It was incredible. I got such like bad vibes this morning when I looked at it. I'm like, even when we're not playing, we're somehow bringing misery to millions. If you didn't see it, it was the semi-final of the Copa. It was a penalty shootout in a totally empty stadium. So you heard everything every player was saying. Yerry Mina strutted up to take his penalty for Colombia, the crucial penalty. And Emi Martinez of Aston Villa just starts utterly just, I mean, unleashing. I mean, what you call it, sledging in cricket. Just because it's in the sporting moment, you can say whatever you want to this human being. And he's kind of like, you are weak. I know exactly what you're going to do. I'm going to eat you for my dinner. I'm going to humiliate you. It was just a torrent of abuse. And of course, Yerry's a force of light. Yerry's a force of joy. I've spent some time with Yerry. Yerry genuinely is what it says on the can. Yerry likes to laugh. Yerry likes to dance. Yerry likes to head footballs off set pieces and occasionally defend. Yerry is a joyous human being. Yerry, I mean, a soft penalty, which Emi Martinez just parries away, runs off into the night. And as he misses, Lionel bloody Messi, the greatest player that's ever walked the earth in many, many people's minds. Bloody Lionel Messi shouts, "Now you're not dancing!" At Yerry Mina, being trash talked by Lionel Messi. What must that feel like, David?
How many players playing against Everton next season are going to yell at Yerry Mina, "Now you're not dancing"? I love it.
When we do pro managerial penalty shootouts, or that idea you had yesterday on the show, GFOP, you said that there should be a game show where the different teams get to nominate from the other team the weakest players to take the penalty. It will definitely be done in an empty stadium with completely loud, unbelievably loud trash talking. I've never heard anything like it. And I think Everton, it's almost like starting the next season with a 10-point reduction. It is that effing brutal. Yes. Oh, but has Leo Messi ever been a bar mitzvah hype person? That's really the only solace Yerry's got right now. Going to do a couple of quick others before I go off and get absolutely bladdered. We're going to bring to the stage the great Liz Brainard. Oh, welcome, Liz.
Hello, I'm calling in from Cleveland, Ohio.
Know it, love it.
Yeah, and I got a real easy question. I thought, Raj, what has been a better feeling today? Your book being number one on the New York Times bestseller list, or England making this Euro 2020 final?
Oh, Sophie's Choice. What did Meryl Streep do in Sophie's Choice in the end to solve it? Does anyone remember?
No idea. Did she murder the baby? I have no idea.
I think she did. I don't know.
That was a different movie. I don't know what it was.
Oh, mate. Liz, I've got to say, the fact that they bet genuinely Harry Kane missed and then scored, and I got a text from my editor at that very second, to be honest, they'll forever be. Can you know how everyone on this green room will remember what happened when England did this thing? And my England doing this thing is so heavily intertwined with this. Honest, to be quite honest, it's a truly a surreal moment. Probably when you look at, you know, 55 years of her, but yes, how many years ago did Caxton invent the printing press? I mean, it's probably the single greatest indictment on the printing industry that I am number one in the New York Times bestseller list. And the fact that those two things are conjoined in that moment will be forever intertwined for me. So I can't separate the two. It's like they are absolutely one and the same. I do want to say it's an incredible moment. Like just for there's a whole team that do a book, and like my editor works so bloody hard on this, and I mean all of it is just there's so many people. It's people who've worked so bloody hard. It's such a I mean, I don't want to sound like I've just scored a goal and then I'm like, well, it's a real team effort, but it is an incredible team effort. And I'm mostly grateful for that team who put a ton of work in and a relief that it was all worth it in the end. And I'm incredibly grateful to all of you on this bloody green room for making it so. But England in the finals, I mean, the joy, what I would say, the joy of the nation in this moment, my parents, my, you know, my brother, God, Nige, just the joy, times that joy times a million. I'd have to say England in the finals far outstrips it because England, the nation needs this right now, wouldn't you say, David?
Yeah, it does. But I don't want to skip past your book, Rog. Number one on the New York Times bestseller list, and there are lots of New York Times bestseller lists, but the biggest one is hardcover nonfiction for you. Your book couldn't, there may be elements of it that might make it to fiction, but hardcover nonfiction is the biggest prize for your book. To be number one on that list, above of your great mate Bill O'Reilly.
I know! I'm like,
Glennon Doyle, GFOP Matthew McConaughey, Malcolm Gladwell, Oprah Winfrey. On that same list, your mate John Green, our great mate John Green.
Oh, mate, who, by the way, helped me more than Ioma. He called me 100 times during that England
amazing.
Game.
Amazing, he's been a great friend.
He's been amazing, mate.
But let's keep on going. Michael Lewis with a book, and you are number one on the hardcover nonfiction list in the New York Times bestseller list. I am both proud of you and I feel delighted by association because on the cover, my favorite part of the book is on the cover. It says the co-host of Men in Blazers. I feel like I made the book. I'm on the New York Times bestseller list. Roger, it is the most amazing achievement. And it's not like this book is written without tremendous emotion for you. It's not like you just like rattled off, you know, whatever it is, 85,000 words. And it was like a just a piece of piss for you. It was... This is writing from your heart of genuine emotion, and it's a culmination of having been around your career for, you know, 15 years. It's a culmination of an adult life's worth of work, becoming the writer that you've become from the childhood you've led and the family you've created and the business we've created together and that, you know, and the, just the voice that you have. You have this remarkable talent. I'm just so proud of you and so delighted for you that it has been genuinely rewarded.
You are such a generous man. I'll just say even North Macedonia score a goal in a tournament from time to time. And I'm in genuine effing shock. And I've not even seen my wife yet. And I want to go and love her and all that crap. I'm going to take one more beautiful question, and then I do need to go and celebrate with my family because it is a mad, mad moment to process in my life. And what you just said is so stunningly beautiful and generous. And man, Dave, I want to fucking excuse me. I want to raise a glass with you too, and Mr. J Dubs, who is the king of kings.
Yeah.
Last question for the day from Mr. Tom Scotty before I fall over. Welcome to the stage, TS. Where are you from, and what's your question?
I'm from just outside Boston, Massachusetts. And my question is it time to be sad yet, now that the tournament is almost over?
Oh, Tommy Scotty, what a beautiful and deep question. I mean, this is a moment, Davo, that I during our World Cup, when we were in Brazil together, I love the group stages where you're just getting battered with games, overwhelmed with storylines, finding new friends multiple times a day, and just tingling. And I find a sadness as soon as we hit the knockout rounds and the games start to come in bundles, fewer of them, and there's my enemy, the break day in between. And I feel I feel a pause of sadness. I feel a deep, deep gratitude. I've got to be candid. I feel an immense gratitude for this tournament. Number one, that it ever happened at all. This time last year, we were devastated. It was off. We were overrun by darker realities. But that it's happened in such a joyful way, such a football-first way, such a giddy, remarkable way. So many goals, so many great goals, so many memories that we will share. And I'm sad. This has been a vintage tournament, David.
Yeah, it's been a great tournament. The ending, look, you and I have been through so many tournaments with each other now, you know, broadcasting them and commenting on them and talking about them, you know, ever since 2006. How many is that? It's, you know, every 2 years since 2006, we've been through these tournaments with each other. It's always tough when tournaments end. And then you sort of feel like, oh, my God, it's such a remarkable amount of time until we get another one. Fortunately, we're going to get an Olympic men's and Olympic women's tournament featuring that tremendous U.S. women's national team. So I think that's going to help, soothe our appetite for a little while. We've got a Premier League season, you know, a Champions League season right around the corner. We've got the U.S. and England in World Cup qualifying. And then we've got a World Cup just 18 months away in Qatar. I think it's going to be a weird World Cup. I even have some questions whether it's even going to happen. But, you know, it's not so far away. But I think we've got to look back on it, and I think we can truly reflect on what has been, especially in the knockout stages, Rog, a truly remarkable football tournament.
Amen. And I'd say it's been amazing to share it with you in this new format, which has been hilarious and a joy and deeply, deeply healing for both of us on a nightly basis. Dave-O, take us home, Daddy-O.
Yeah, we're going to be back same time. Well, hopefully this doesn't go to overtime. Same channel. Hopefully it doesn't go even later after penalties. Right after Sunday's final. Rogelio, can we get a toast to tide us over until then?
Oh, mate. I want to raise this Jägermeister, this bolt of human emotion in a shot glass, to the notion of it coming home, which... it's the epitome of English brilliance to me. It's such a meta joke, taking the big dream that every English person feels ahead of every tournament, knowing full well how it ends with shattered dreams, broken hearts, tragedy, and acknowledging it. Just the individual yearning, expressing it as a collective, almost ironically, thus managing the nation's worst fears in the process. It's a bit like Born in the USA, the chorus of It's Coming Home is the Born in the USA of world football, because the verses are filled with just a dark sentiment that is the opposite of what you think the song is about. They are filled with acknowledgement of failure, regret, longing and lament. And despite all of that, the England fans, like Chris Willis, like Michael Davis, have gone again. Every tournament, ultimately, it's a song of tenacity and perseverance about never giving up. And today, this tournament, this game, that longing was fulfilled. And then some.
And England fans like Roger Bennett also. Vendepunkt, Rog.
War pig!
Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Balds win, balds win!
Oh, take that, Gloria!
Balds didn't lose today, Rog.
Oh, to Tweed.
Abracadabra, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Love you, Dave-O.
Love you, Rog. Congratulations. So happy for you.
Oh, mate, I'm going to go and kiss my wife. Love you, America.
So nice. Okay, bye.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.